And that case will be taken under advisement, and we'll move to the sixth case of U.S. versus Gillette. And for the appellant, Mr. Nolte.
Good morning. May it please the Court, Peter Nolte on behalf of Nevin Gillette, the appellant in this case, who entered a plea of guilty to a wire fraud charge and was thereafter sentenced to 132 months in the Bureau of Prisons. At sentencing, there were two main areas of contention. One, the number of victims involved in the alleged scheme, and then number two, the total loss involved. We're not renewing any of the objections to the number of victims. Just one particular aspect of the district court's conclusion regarding the amount of loss. As the court is aware, in these cases, the sentence is adjusted upward depending upon the total amount of the loss. And in this case, the dispute was whether the loss was between $2.5 million and $7 million or over $7 million. Obviously, the government taking the position that it exceeded $7 million. Our complaint with the calculation of the district court centers around one transaction involving one particular victim, J.P. Ag Services and John Paul. Essentially, what the government presented on this, and which we believe is legally insufficient, is that a check was written by the defendant on one of his accounts to J.P. Ag Services, or I'm sorry, John Paul, on May 8th of 06, and that particular check, which was introduced into evidence, or at least a copy of it was, showed that on the back it was endorsed by Mr. Paul's company, J.P. Ag Services, for deposit at a certain bank. The government also presented the defendant's bank statement for that particular bank for that particular month, May of 2006, which showed that that check was never paid, was never dishonored either. It didn't. Apparently, the check was never negotiated, at least as of May 31st, 2006, which was the date of the ending date of that particular bank statement. Based on that, essentially, the district court found that he didn't believe that the check was paid, and therefore there was this $360,000 additional amount that would fall into the loss category. It's our position that what was before the district court at the time simply is insufficient to justify a reasonable inference that it wasn't paid. And I, as I pointed out,
well, if it was paid, there would have been clear evidence of that somewhere. There, some bank record would show that that check actually was honored.
If it was paid during the month of May, you mean?
Any time.
Well,
even after that. And there was no evidence introduced that showed it was paid.
That's correct, Judge. And in that regard, I think it's important to point out that this particular aspect of the larger number of transactions involving this victim was, as I understand the record, something that was disclosed to the defense counsel on the day of the hearing. And it's clear from the record in this case that both the government and defense counsel for at least a couple of weeks, I guess, had traded information back and forth with regard to this, but as I read the record, this particular aspect of the transactions between the defendant and J.P. Ag were just found out by the government the night before the sentencing hearing and disclosed to the defendant on the day of the hearing, so I don't see how he could possibly have had any evidence to present on that. Additionally, I don't know what...
For additional time to...
Pardon me?
Did he ask for additional time to seek evidence? Or?
At this particular point in the proceedings, no. The prior week, he did, and the court district court granted him an additional 7 or 8 days, I forget exactly what it was. On the day in question, rather than asking for a continuance, he simply asked the district court to disregard the evidence.
And you say that's the first time he was informed that the check had not cleared?
As I understand the record, Your Honor, and I wasn't there, it's the first time that this particular transaction was included in the government's sum of calculations of loss pertaining to this particular victim.
No, I mean, he had no information about this check or about the fact that the check didn't clear?
Both. As I understand the record, Judge. You know, and as I pointed out in my brief, the postal agent in this case who testified at the sentencing hearing with regard to all of these transactions amongst all of the victims testified that that very morning he had spoken with one of the Pauls, I guess at the time of the hearing, former wife, but still employed by the company. We don't know whether he asked her about that particular check or not, but he certainly didn't testify that she said it hadn't been paid. I mean, based upon what's here, what was before the district court at the time he made his determination as to the loss, all we have is that a check was issued, and we don't know what happened to it. And it's our position that that is simply not sufficient to justify the inference that the check wasn't paid.
Well, did you offer any evidence concerning the check not being honored or paid?
No, sir, because, as I said, we just found out about it that morning. As I understand,
what, pardon me?
We just found out about that particular check that very morning.
Of course, this check was a defensive item. I mean, it was a reduction in the loss, right?
Yes, correct. It should have been. It ultimately wasn't, but we believe it
wasn't
should have been.
Wasn't the court entitled by a preponderance of the evidence to make that finding when it wasn't returned to John Paul?
I don't believe so, because all we have is evidence that the check was...
Well, you've got evidence that it was never honored or credited to JP's account.
There was no evidence presented about this check other than it exists or existed in May of 2006.
No, but before this check was disclosed to you, the loss was larger, right? This was a reduction in the loss we're talking about.
No. Initially, the start of the sentencing hearing, the week prior, the government's position was that the loss involved here was $680,000, and I don't believe that there was a disagreement as to that. This was an additional $360,000. Added on to the...
Yeah, but this particular check was returning another check, which was the additional amount.
I don't know that it was returning it, Judge. That's not clear. I mean, it was for the same amount.
That's what it was, wasn't it? That's what we're arguing about, is whether they reduced the loss by reason of returning this check, which either cleared or didn't clear.
Well, as I understand the calculations, this particular $360,000 was not credited to the defendant.
Didn't Gillette transfer $355,000 that left his account the day after this transaction, or the day before?
Right around there. I don't remember off the top of my head.
Isn't that kind of suspicious?
Could be.
I mean, don't you think that the judge is entitled to infer something from that?
Well...
That just didn't... Santa Claus doesn't come only in December.
Well, you have to... I think, keep in mind the big picture, Your Honor.
Pardon me?
I think that the if you look at the larger...
We're talking about $355,000 and the losses, $360,000.
Right.
Isn't that kind of unusual to you and the proximity of these events?
Yes, it is.
All right. But, so you can't argue that the judge is wrong in so making that finding, can you?
In terms of, I believe that in terms of the judge saying that based upon the fact that the check written by the defendant to J.P. Ag was written on May 8th and that there's no evidence that it was paid up to May 31st of that same month is not sufficient.
All right.
To make the inference that it wasn't paid.
All right. Thank you, Mr.
McKenzie.
Good morning. John McKenzie on behalf of the United States. May it please the Court. The Court's correct. This is a credit. And perhaps I can explain maybe a little bit of the dynamics that were going on. This was not the largest Ponzi case in the world, but certainly a complex Ponzi case with a lot of monies going in and out, funneling back and forth. This particular check was towards the end of the Ponzi scheme. The Ponzi scheme ended in August of 06, and this was in May of 06. And the court may note that there was a similar transaction like this where money comes in and money goes right back out. And that was the Judy Ness, where he gets a check for her for $225,000. It comes in. He gives her back immediately a check for $200,000. Her check clears. His check doesn't. So on top of her $225,000, she got another $200,000. That's in the sentencing at 112. This is a similar sort of thing, where the money comes in from John Paul, his trucking company. The money is immediately wired out, or at least a large chunk of it is wired out, to an attorney for another victim up in Madison. At that point, now, the amount of money in the account goes down. Several days later, the original check was deposited on the 3rd of May. On the May 8th, this check is dated. At that point in time, the account balance had gone down so far that there was only $7,240-some left in the account. The judge is entitled to look at it and say, well, there's nothing on the check showing that it was negotiated. All it is stamped on the back with a signature on the back for deposit, but nothing else. And the court knows from its own checks that there's always some sort of check count notation in the back of a check. This one doesn't have it, and for good reason. There's not any money in the account. The account's down to $7,000 at that point. The judge is entitled to look at the bank statement, which was produced to him, which showed there is no check. This check simply does not show up in the account. Now, there was some trading of exhibits back and forth in these final periods, but the United States tried to put all of the evidence it had, both credits and debits. This, as the court noted, is something that the defendant certainly had access to. This was his bank account. This is something that he would know if it was credited. He certainly could have pulled out the statement and said, wait a second, it was credited in August or November or in 2008, whenever the point in time he wanted to choose, but he simply didn't have that evidence. And the reason was because it never was credited. The court was entitled to rely upon the bank statement, was entitled to rely upon the account balance in finding that this particular check was never negotiated, and that, therefore, the defendant shouldn't have received a credit from the loss amount for purposes of the sentencing guidelines. We ask that you affirm the sentence and the conviction of the defendant.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Mr. Nolte, I think you used your time, but you could have another minute. I see no other questions. Thank you. And